I'm sure that we've all heard the phrase, working like the devil. It's a phrase that is used when someone is trying to show how much effort and so how much hard work someone is putting into whatever they're doing. It's a phrase, like many of our other phrases, that we use semi-frequently, that I don't know that we always stop and consider really what the background, the origin of that phrase is, or what it really means. Again, I guess we understand it to some extent. We don't really stop and think. Working like the devil. That's kind of an odd phrase for us. Everything we know about the devil is that he's evil. He's bad. He's trying to turn us away from God. He's trying to cost us our eternity. But this one phrase, working like the devil, to me says at least one aspect of the devil is something that Christians can maybe even aspire to, which is very odd. It's a very odd phrase. But I want us to consider that thought of working like the devil this morning. In our Wednesday night Bible classes, Brother Charles has been directing our minds through these parables. And again, these are all aspects of our life, traits of our life that we need as Christians to apply. But I couldn't help but think these are the same traits, same aspects that Satan uses against us. And he does an excellent job of using them. These same things, and it just goes to show me that, you know, good things can be used for evil. We know that. It's very clear that way. The scripture reading that Sam just read there in Luke chapter 16, there the Lord is not trying to commend this unjust servant, this unrighteous man for the things that he did, the shrewdness, as it says there. He's not commending him for that, but what he is saying is he took something and he did a good job with it, even though he used it for evil. He had a great ability to consider a situation, to size it up, and to use diligence and decisiveness in what he's doing. He did a good job in that. Unfortunately, he made a choice with his great ability to do a great, terrible thing with it. What if he had used that same diligence and decisiveness and quick thinking for good before he got to the situation he was, where he was losing his job and he was having to scramble to save himself? He could have used that same energy to do good and to have been very profitable for his master. Again, I'm not going to get into all of this. That's one thing I'm not trying to, let's go look up at all the parables again. That would be rude. It'd be a slap in the face to Charles. He's doing a good job of us in Bible class. But I do want us to just mention, whenever these things happen, this is just like what we're talking about for us in these parables. And so I don't want to step on Charles's toes or rehash anything. There's no need for us to do that this morning. I just kind of want to point those things out, how we can use these things. That's the same thing that Satan does. He uses good aspects, good traits, and he turns them to evil. But what if he and we use this same decisiveness, this same amount of energy for good? How much could be accomplished for the Lord instead of against him as Satan does that? We understand Satan is constantly busy trying to find ways to distract us, to tempt us, to draw us away from God. And he's very effective at what he does. We can see that by looking at our world, our society, our country. Satan is doing a fantastic job. He's employee of the month for hundreds of years running because he is bound and determined to do his work good. And we need to be working like the devil, but in a better way. So I hope everyone understands what I'm saying. But when we consider Satan, it really should make us stop and think and consider, what could I do? How could I do better? How could I serve God and be a better servant and combat Satan and use the same amount of energy in doing that? So that's what I want us to consider. Look at some of these same traits that Satan uses for evil and how we can use those things for good. The first one that I want us to consider this morning is how we can work like the devil in our preparedness, how we can prepare like he does. As I said a moment ago, it's no secret that Satan is working right now, this very moment, to figure out how he can tempt us and test us and try to pull us away from God, be it this afternoon, be it next week, next year, be it right now. If your mind is wondering and thinking on what you're doing, that's Satan trying to get you away from your worship this morning. If he's distracting you in some way, he's working right now. He's prepared for this. Well, next time they do this, I'm going to try to do this. He's very good. But it should make us stop and think, what am I doing? If he's trying to kill my soul, what am I doing to prepare my soul so it doesn't get taken away from me? What am I doing to prepare to be in contact with the lost and try to save lost souls? He's trying to pull them away. What am I doing for that? And that's really this whole thought of this lesson. It's a battle with Satan. He's working hard. Are we working like him? Or even more so. He's not relenting. He's not giving up. But what about us? What are we doing in all this? It's a very much a self-reflection kind of lesson to see, what am I doing? Or what am I not doing? Am I working as hard as he is to save while he's trying to destroy? Ephesians chapter 6 talks a whole lot about our preparation, the second half of the chapter there. We need to be prepared. In verse 11, he points out one aspect. He says, put on the whole armor of God that you may be able to stand against the wiles of the devil. The devil. So we've already established who it is that we're fighting against. And this word, the wiles of the devil, we don't use that. Wiles. The definition of wiles is technically devious or cunning stratagems employed in manipulating or persuading someone to do what one wants. Is that exactly what Satan does? He does whatever he can to get us to do what we want to do and not do what God wants us to do, not to submit to someone else, but to submit to ourselves. And that's what Paul is warning about here. You need to prepare to fight against that because this is what he's going to do to you. Basically, he's saying Satan's already prepared. He's ready to destroy you. You've got to be just as prepared to fight against him. We all know how foolish it would be for us to try to go against Satan without preparing for it. To go to battle without preparing to see what's going on and understand what we're about to face. But do we do that? Turn over to Luke chapter 14. Luke chapter 14. Here, the context here is counting the cost. Again, in this aspect of are we willing to do what it takes to give up everything in order to follow Christ? But again, it's so that we can be ready and know what we're getting ourselves into. But here in Luke chapter 14, beginning in verse 28, Jesus says this, "For which one of you, when he wants to build a tower, does not first sit down and calculate the cost to see if he has enough to complete it? Otherwise, when he has laid a foundation and is not able to finish, all who deserve or observe it begin to ridicule him, saying, 'This man began to build and was not able to finish.' Or what king, when he sets out to meet another king in battle, will not first sit down and take counsel whether he is strong enough with 10,000 men to encounter the one coming against him with 20,000? Or else, while the other is still far away, he sends a delegation and ask terms of peace." Again, as I said earlier, it would be foolish for us to try to go to battle against Satan without first preparing for that battle. But I want us to consider how many times we do that in our lives. When we leave our homes, do we stop and consider, I'm about to go into this world. I'm about to face temptation. Satan is about to come at me, and I need to be prepared for that. The best thing we could do before we leave our house every day is to pray. To pray, Lord, help me to understand and recognize Satan as he faces me in all these different aspects. Because we know we're about to go into battle every time we open up that front door. But do we really stop and prepare ourselves for that? And what's even scarier is our children. Do we prepare our children before they walk out that door and face Satan? Again, we can't be there and fight all their battles for them, but we can prepare them. We can pray with them. We can help them to be aware as they walk out that door, this is what you're about to face, or something like it. Brother Ricky did a good job in his prayer. I mentioned Jonathan specifically. We've got all of our college kids that are heading off for a week, a semester, a month. Money's on the line. We already talked about that a little yesterday. We don't know how long this is going to happen. Jesus may come back before anybody gets to college. And so we got to be prepared in that aspect. But if not, Satan will be there. That's a guarantee. Are we preparing ourselves, our children? Are we preparing ourselves to save ourselves, but also to help save the lost? We can't just focus on ourselves either. That's a selfish way of doing it. But another parable that we've talked about there, Matthew chapter 13. This is a parable there of the tares. Again, we're not going to read the parable. I do want to read, beginning of verse 37, the explanation of the parable, or part of it at least, and help us to understand again who we're fighting here. The explanation is Jesus gives it in verse 37, "The one who sows the good seed is the Son of Man, and the field is the world. And as far as the good seed, these are the sons of the kingdom, and the tares are the sons of the evil one." Notice verse 39, "And the enemy who sowed them is the devil." He doesn't wish-wash about it. He doesn't try to hide it or anything. He said, it's the devil. Satan is the one who's out here, and he's planting. And what Jesus is acknowledging is Satan is prepared. He's prepared, and he's already gone out and sown the tares. He's done his job, and he's going to tend those tares, and he's going to try to get them to grow as much as possible. But what have you prepared to do? Have you sown that good seed? Have you gone out and tried to tend that and encourage it to grow as much as possible? I understand God gives the increase. I'm not saying that. But are we doing everything we can to try to pull as many weeds and try to water and try to give as much encouragement to that as possible? Again, our example goes a long way in doing that, but we've got to be preparing and working just as much as Satan is to do this. Are we preparing just as much to reach the lost as Satan is? That's the consideration we've got to keep in mind this morning. In Ephesians chapter 6, again, we go back there and we see another thing that Paul tells us as far as preparation there. He tells us that we are to have our feet shod in verse 15 with the preparation of the gospel. We've got to be prepared. We've got to know what's going on there with the word so that we can spread the word. In Matthew chapter 24 and verse 44, very similar there. It says, "Therefore you be ready to." Be ready, be prepared. Why? "Because the Son of Man is coming at an hour when you do not think he will." We've got to be working like the devil. We've got to be preparing like the devil. Again, he's going to, again, the common misconception of who Satan is and what he's going to do, he's not going to be ruling in hell. He's going to be suffering in hell. And misery loves company. He wants me to go with him. He's working hard at it. He's preparing for that. Are we doing the same thing to get others to heaven? To help them see God, to see Christ and his sacrifice, to access that grace so that that can get them there in heaven. But we got to consider that Satan doesn't stop just in the preparation and the planning phase. He follows through with his plans. And that's something that, again, I think we may fall short on sometimes in our lives. It doesn't matter how prepared that we are in our lives to help save souls or to know the word. If we're not going to follow through with our plan of saving souls and saving ourselves, it's not going to do us any good. We can plan all day long, but if we don't get out there and do something about it, then we're lost. I'm sure that all of us at one point or another have made plans and had great intentions on talking to somebody about God. We had great intentions and great plans on pointing out someone's sin to them so that they can get their life right with God. But for some reason, our plan fell through. We prepared for it, but we didn't follow through with that. I would say most likely the reason for that is that we became afraid. That's why I usually fail in that. I get to that and the moments that are, and your heart starts beating real fast and your adrenaline's going, it's like, okay, this is what I need to do. But then you start thinking, well, what are they going to say? How are they going to respond to this? I don't know if I'm going to say things right. Am I going to have the answers to their questions? And whatever reason happens, the action that we take is to clench our jaws and not say a word. We plan, but we didn't follow through with it. But as we look at Satan, he doesn't not follow through with it. He follows through with his plans. And that's something where we need to work more like Satan. In those moments when we realize that our fear is starting to take over, so we need to remember one thing, and that is there are souls depending on us. There's a soul depending on me right now to swallow my fear, to swallow my pride, and to open my mouth and say, "You're lost." With love, in the best way that we can say it. Or to introduce them to God and say, "This is what you need." I think about John chapter 4 when Jesus is talking to that Samaritan woman. He says, "You want some water? Let me give you some water. I've got the water that you need where you'll never thirst again." It took guts for him to open his mouth and say that. He said a lot of things to a lot of people that made them mad, but his soul, his desire for their soul, and him remembering, I've got a soul depending on me, all the way to the cross, he was willing to do it. I think that we can swallow our fear and our pride and follow through with our plans. Again, Satan is following through with his plans. Turn over to 2 Corinthians chapter 8. 2 Corinthians chapter 8. Here Paul is talking to the brethren about their giving. But I hope you can understand what I'm saying here with Paul's thoughts here. The idea of following through with it. 2 Corinthians chapter 8, beginning of verse 10. He says, "And I give my opinion in this matter, for this is to our advantage, who were the first to begin a year ago, not only to do this, but also to desire to do it." Notice verse 11. "But now finish doing it also, that just as there was the readiness to desire it, so there may be also the completion of it by your ability." These people and these brethren here, they had a desire to do this. They wanted to do it. Now they're ready to do it. And so Paul's writing them saying, complete it. Follow through with it. Finish this work. It doesn't matter how much we want to help someone. If we don't follow through, that's not going to do anything. In Acts chapter 2, they could have said, yep, you've got a need. But until they sold their goods, they had all things in common at that point. No one had was in any need for anything, because they followed through with their plan, with their desire to do this. You look in chapter 9, we see the same thing, but this time he's talking about it in relation to ministering to the saints. There in verse 1 it says, "For it is superfluous for me to write to you about this ministry to the saints, for I know your readiness," or as the New King James says, "your willingness." I know that you want to do this, but you need to follow through, that you need to continue. That's the same thing that we need to do. Follow through. Don't just have the thought or the desire or the wish. Do it. Continue on and do the good so it can do good for others. I think about James chapter 2, where he reminds us there in verses 15 and 16. You know what? You can't just have faith. A real faith is a faith that has works that go along with that. And he goes on to say, you can say all day long, be warmed and filled, but unless you do something about it, you follow through with it, then you're not going to, it's not going to do anybody any good. Well, the same thing goes along here with good preparation to save souls. Unless we follow through, we're not going to help save anyone's souls. We're not going to do anything that's going to help them get to heaven. We've got salvation in our minds and salvation in our hands when we've got a Bible in them. But are we sharing that? Are we giving it to others? I know how to help someone get to heaven. But if it's stuck here, it's never going to help them in any way at all. Again, this is the lesson that we talked about there in Matthew chapter 21, talking about the parable of these two sons. Which one of these did his father's will? Which one was pleasing to him? It said there, it's the one who did the will of his father. Not the one who says, I'm going to do what you want me to do. The one who actually went and did it. And so there's another example there where we need to follow those. Actions speak louder than words. And so we need to apply that in our spiritual life. Satan isn't afraid to follow through with his plan. He doesn't get afraid or scared or nervous whenever he's doing his work. He follows through. We can't be scared about being Christians and sharing that either. But what if we prepare? What if we do follow through and we speak up and we talk to someone about the Lord? We talk to them about their sin and how they can get their life right with God. But then we turn around and we get shot down and rejected. What do we do then? Well, I would suggest we do the exact same thing we've been talking about this morning. We work like the devil. Because the devil is persistent. He doesn't give up and stop. He continues working very hard. Man, my slides are not onto that. I apologize for that. He's persistent. He doesn't give up in there. I think sometimes one of our biggest weaknesses is when, as soon as we get rejected, as soon as we are defeated, we give up way too easily. It's almost like we cower and lick our wounds and run home with our tail between our legs because we got rejected in something. And unfortunately, that's the society that we live in today. We get our feelings hurt and we get upset and things at the smallest issue. And it's sad, but I'm guilty of it, and likely everyone here is to some extent. We don't stick with it like we need to do. We give up way too easily. But when we do that, what we're doing is we're giving Satan the upper hand. Think of it like this. Satan is fighting for someone over on this side. We're fighting for that same person on this side. We're trying to help them get to heaven. He's trying to get them away from heaven. And we say, well, I'm going to give up because I was rejected. Who's there to oppose Satan now? Nobody. We've just given him the upper hand and said, well, go for it. You can have him. Is kind of what we're doing whenever we decide to not step in and stick with it and we give up. But think about it. When we reject Satan, what does he do? Does he give up? Does he just shrug his shoulders and say, well, I tried? Those same words that echo in our own ears, well, I tried. And they didn't listen to me. They rejected me, and so I gave up. Satan doesn't give up. I wish he did. We reject him, and he comes back again. He tries from a different angle. He looks for another opportunity. He keeps going. But what about us? Why do we give up when he doesn't? Something to consider. Something for us to think about. Turn over to Luke chapter 4. Well, if you want to. I'm just going to kind of summarize. But here we find Jesus being tempted by Satan. And you can see his approach in his temptations. Here in verses 2 through 4, we see Satan. He doesn't just walk up to Jesus and say, well, let me try something. He looks and he observes Jesus. What does he see in Jesus? He says, he's hungry. So he tempts him in that way. He says, well, why don't you turn this stone into bread? And so he thinks, oh, this is going to work. Well, Jesus rejects him. What does he do? Does he turn around and go home? No. He's persistent. He's Satan. And so he looks at another aspect. And so he shows him all the kingdoms of the world in verses 5 through 8. He says, all these things can be yours if you'll only simply worship me. Well, Jesus rejects him again. And so Satan runs off and he's sad because he got rejected. No, Satan being Satan, he persists yet again. And he tempts Jesus again. Because that's what Satan does. Are we working like Satan? Let me ask you, how many times can you honestly say that you have gone to someone and you presented the word to them and you got rejected? So you presented it to them again, and you got rejected. And you presented it to them three times you've been rejected, but you kept going. How many times can you say that you've done that? Honestly. Maybe a couple. Maybe you're an overachiever and you've done quite a few. I hope you are. But I know myself. I'll go talk to someone, and they reject me. And then most of the time, I'll go to them again and bring it up again. But then it's like, well, I've learned my lesson. I've already been rejected twice. They're not interested. And I make that judgment in my mind. And I gave up. But Satan didn't. I think we all could learn a lesson of how we can be more like Satan in this aspect. Of how we can be just as persistent as he is. Maybe there's somebody right now that you've been talking to. Maybe you've stopped talking to them because you've done the exact same thing that I just described. You said, well, I've tried once, twice, three or four times. It's kind of like that thing, how many times should I forgive someone? 70 times 7, that doesn't mean you go 490 times and you stop. How many times are we going to persist in trying to teach someone? And I understand there's a whole lesson there in casting pearls before swine as well. But I think we're too quick to judge that than we maybe ought to be. Satan is persistent in that. He doesn't judge us and say, well, I've tried it two or three times and give up. Well, they're too much of a pearl and not enough of a swine, so I'm going to go somewhere else. No, he's going to work harder. And again, these are things that we know, but we need to consider these things. Turn over to 1 Peter chapter 5. Here Peter talks about the persistence of Satan as well, and it's interesting the way that he describes it. 1 Peter chapter 5, beginning of verse 8, he says, be of a sober spirit. Be on the alert, or be vigilant, as the New King James says. Your adversary, the devil, prowls about like a roaring lion, seeking someone to devour. But resist him, verse 9 says, firm in your faith, knowing that the same experiences of suffering are being accomplished by your brethren who are in the world. And so Peter tells us we need to be sober. We need to be on the alert. We need to be vigilant. Again, that word vigilant literally means watchful, observant, attentive, or alert. We need to be this way because Satan is like this. He has already got these things going on there. He has these traits. And we need to do it if we're going to be battling against him. Again, the way that he's described here, being a prowling, hunting, roaring lion. When I think about this passage, I think about the nature television shows. And there, you know, when they're over in Africa, you see these lions and these cheetahs. And they're sitting there waiting patiently. Boy, we miss out on our patience, don't we, in this country? We are not patient at all. We got to jump on things as soon as we see it, or else we're not going to do it at all. And I think about that, the Burger King slogan, have it your way. We are a impatient, I want it my way, I want it right now. And that goes over into our spiritual lives as well. But these lions and these cheetahs, they're sitting there patiently waiting for that opportune moment for them to attack and jump on that prey, whatever they're going after. But what do they do when they miss? Because they miss quite often. Do they go home and do nothing? No, they'll starve to death, and they know that they're going to die, and that's something we need to remember for ourselves. They go back to their hiding place, and they wait some more. Patiently waiting for that opportune moment where they can have the most success in their hunt. Well, we've got to understand that's exactly what Satan is doing. He's being described as a lion because he acts like one. He's patiently waiting for that opportune time to jump on some unsuspecting victim and take them away. We've got to understand that's what we've got to do. No, we're not looking for some victim to try to teach the gospel to. We're trying to save that opportune moment, though, and wait until, and again, we're cultivating the soil. We've got to remember that. But waiting for that time that we can be the most effective in teaching the gospel. You know, and there's a lot of situational things in there and trying to find that moment. But again, we're talking about being persistent here. We've got to do that and not give up the first time that we were rejected in something. Stick with it and keep trying over and over. Again, Satan doesn't give up whenever he's defeated. So why do we? We need to think about that. We need the same persistence. Again, back to a couple more of these parables that we talked about there. The same persistence of that friend at midnight there in Luke chapter 11. Or the persistent widow there in Luke chapter 18. Again, how many times were they rejected? But they didn't give up. They persisted. And they kept going on until they achieved their goal. And they received what they needed. We need that same kind of persistence ourselves. Again, we've talked about that in the parables. So I don't want to get into it too much. But again, Satan doesn't give up, and neither should we. The last one that I want us to consider, where we need to work like the devil, is when we're looking at convincing and persuading. Convincing and persuading. Man, all these are off. I apologize for that. Have you ever noticed how can Satan convince so many in the world, including ourselves, to sin, even though we know the cost of sin, even though we know the consequences of sin? How does he still get us to sin? Did you ever scratch your head on that one and go, I know what this is, why do I give in to it? Well, as you look at Genesis chapter 3, we know exactly why. Because he says he was more cunning than any of the other animals of the field, talking about the serpent, Satan. He's cunning, he's crafty. And so he's able to do this and deceive us. Look over at 2 Corinthians chapter 11. Again, he's so persuasive that Paul, as he's writing to the brethren here, he's concerned about them. He's afraid that Satan's craftiness and cunning is able to pull these brethren away from the truth. And so notice what he says here, 2 Corinthians chapter 11, verse 3. He says, but I'm afraid, lest as the serpent deceived Eve by his craftiness, your minds should be led astray from the simplicity and purity of devotion to Christ. For if one comes and preaches another Jesus, whom we have not preached, or you receive a different spirit, which you have not received, or a different gospel, which you have not accepted, you bear this beautifully. Or as New King James says, you may well put up with it. He was worried about how Satan was going to affect these people. He's not just talking to people in the world. He's talking to brethren. And he's afraid that Satan, as he says there, by his craftiness, might be able to persuade Christians to fall away. Those that know good and well what they should be doing. But they listen to what he has to offer. And again, there's dangers in that. That we need to be considering as well. In verses 13 through 15, he continues saying that Satan is so persuasive, and he has won so many souls so greatly because he makes himself and even a sin look like a good thing. Look at verse 13. For such men are false prophets, deceitful workers, disguising themselves as apostles of Christ. Verse 14. And no wonder, for even Satan disguises himself as an angel of light. Therefore, it is not surprising if his servants also disguise themselves as servants of righteousness, whose end shall be according to their deeds. In Matthew chapter 7, we see Jesus also describes and warns them of Satan's tactics there. Verse 15, he warns them, beware of false prophets who come to you in sheep's clothing, but inwardly they are ravenous wolves. And what he's saying is beware of the facade that Satan puts on. That he is trying to trick us, to deceive us, to make us think that evil things are good. And he does a really good job of it. Again, how many times do we fall into these very tactics that Satan uses? But we need to be using these tactics not in a deceptive manner, but in a way that we can help save the lost. Another reason, as you turn over to 2 Timothy chapter 4, another reason that Satan is so good at deceiving and convincing people to turn from the Lord is because he offers them exactly what they want. And this is something that we can see so clearly in the church today. 2 Timothy chapter 4 and verse 3, as Paul's telling Timothy, he says, for the time will come when they will not endure sound doctrine, but what? But wanting to have their ears tickled, they will accumulate for themselves teachers in accordance to their own desires, to the things that they want, and will turn away their ears from the truth and will turn aside to myths. Again, we've got to be just as persuasive in teaching the gospel and sharing the gospel and bringing people to the Lord as Satan is at turning them away from the Lord. But as you look back at verse 2, notice how Paul tells Timothy to do this or what he needs to be doing. He says, young preacher, preach the word. Again, I think that applies to everyone, not just those that are in the pulpit on Sunday. We need to be preaching the word, teaching the lost. Preach the word, be ready in season and out of season. Reprove, or as New King James says, convince. Isn't that what we're talking about right now? Convincing and persuading. Preacher, you need to preach the word, you need to be ready, you need to convince these people. Rebuke these people, exhort them with great patience and instruction. This is how you're going to combat Satan. This is how you're going to fight the devil here. He's going to be working very hard to convince these people to turn from God. You need to preach the word. That's the power. That's what's going to help people see the truth if they're looking for it. Over in 2 Corinthians chapter 5, we see Paul give another very compelling reason that we need to be out there compelling and persuading the lost. Beginning verse 10, 2 Corinthians chapter 5, he says this. He said, for we must all appear before the judgment seat of Christ, that each one may receive the things done in the body according to what he has done, whether good or bad. Knowing, therefore, the terror of the Lord, we do what? We persuade men. But we are well known to God, and I also trust are well known in your conscience. Part of our judgment is going to be based on what we do or do not teach to the lost. What are we doing while we are here? Are we working like the devil? Or are we shying away and letting him have free rein to whatever he wants to do? Again, there's a lot of things going into our judgment there. But he says the things that you do, good or bad, we're going to be held against. We're going to be held responsible for those things. Again, it's just like as we read there in Luke chapter 14. If you look at that parable of the great supper there as we're talking about on Wednesday night. Verse 23, then the master said to the servant, go out into the highways and hedges and do what? Compel them, is what my version says. Compel them to come in that my house may be filled. Our duty is to go out and sow the word, sow the seed of the kingdom. We need to encourage growth. As it says there, we need to compel others to fill our Father's house, our Master's house. That's what we need to be doing. We need to desire earnestly to persuade and convince people, because Satan is. But we need to get it in the right direction and not allow them to be pulled away from the Lord. Are we working like the devil or not? If you're like me, there's several aspects of this sermon that may be a little painful, to be quite honest with you. Some aspects that I look and I say, you know what, I'm not a fit match for the devil. I've not been one. but you know, I could be. It just takes a little bit more effort, a little bit more recognition of what I need to be doing and stepping up and doing those things. And maybe that applies to you as well. Again, he's very cunning, as we talked about this morning. He's got lots of experience in what he does. But we can't let that keep us from fighting against him and working like he does. And if we don't use every tool that we have, we're never going to be as effective for the Lord as we could be. And so with that, I'll give the lesson to you. Again, if there's ever an aspect that we should be like Satan, this is the one. Working like him, his diligence, his work ethic, we need to be like that in our lives. Again, we need to prepare, we need to follow through, we need to be persistent, we need to be convincing and trying to persuade the lost to come to him. So the lesson is yours. Again, if you are here this morning, or maybe if you're in the internet land and you have any spiritual need, this is a great time to take care of it. If you haven't, you need the prayers of the brethren, need encouragement, we'll be happy to do that. If you're not a child of God, there's absolutely no reason for you not to make your life right with the Lord right now, to give yourself hope of heaven, to have a family with the Lord and to be with him for all eternity. That is what's at stake. And if you have a need for that, please let us know so that we can make this happen for you. I appreciate your time this morning. I hope this lesson has been encouraging to